Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. This is the Tuesday edition. Coming up on today's program, there's a record number of officers leaving the Dallas Police Department. It has the city officials concerned. Also, U.S. Federal Department is censoring use of the term climate change. That's got some climate change proponents quite upset. And also, this Russia collusion investigation goes on. Why does the left suddenly hate Russia? That and more on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. I believe there are about four spots left open. There's no limits to Twitter, I don't think. And you can email us if you'd like to, comments at kpcg.fm. We appreciate getting those. Most times they're from pretty global audience because, of course, we're online. That's where a lot of the listeners are. And we get responses from quite a few different locations, U.S., Canada, sometimes around the world. We haven't gotten – I mentioned the other day – by the way, I'm Dwight Falk, Grand Turgeon here. I mentioned the other day we had a couple of listeners that were coming from Russia and China, and they have not written yet. Mainly because I – probably because I can't read Russian or Chinese.
Right.
So I – if it came from China, it would just be those big symbols. It would be such a long email, but it wouldn't say a whole lot, I guess.
I wonder how that works. Do they have a keyboard that has every single symbol on it, or do they have like some sort of a drop-down list on the Word document that they're using? It just seems like it wouldn't be too convenient to type something for them.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I know, and I don't know much about the Chinese language, I just remember when I was a kid watching some educational programs that would give you 10 minutes about the Chinese language, and that's my whole knowledge base there. They had a person that was showing, I think it was Reading Rainbow, and they were showing how to make the characters. And it's quite a thing. It's quite an art form to do it. You've got to be an artist pretty much to make those. And so it was fascinating, but that's all I know about it. So my knowledge with the Chinese language stopped at about 7 years old. That's all I know.
Well, it does seem like they have a unique artistic capability, and it's probably because even in something as simple as writing their words, they have to put a lot of detail and care into it.
Yeah, the English language is really an interesting language for people to try to learn as a second language, because the same word has multiple meanings depending on how it's used, or then you factor in, say, sarcasm, or where something is said but the opposite is meant based upon the way it's said. So I could see that being very confusing for people. Because there's just different ways of expressing things in different languages.
Well, even a lot of people who have only spoken English their entire lives get confused by that, because there are so many intricacies and details to it, especially if someone is speaking it. They could have a slightly different inflection, and their voice could change the entire meaning of the sentence. If it's written down, there's like four different spellings of some words, and you have to know which one is which.
Yeah, that's why you have to be very careful with emails and texts, because you can't hear the way the person's saying it. Sometimes things can seem pretty abrasive, but it wasn't maybe meant that way. So you always have to be careful with that. I actually saw a write-up today, and I hope it's not true, because it's not good for me, I don't think. But they were saying that if you like puns and like wordplay and jokes, and like your mind always thinks of those things, you probably have brain damage. I was like, what? How could you say something like that?
Wow.
So I didn't read all of it, but I don't agree with that. Brain damage.
Really offensive.
It is really offensive. What if you just like a little wordplay? I don't think that's brain damage.
I would think you're more witty than most people.
I don't know. So I was offended by their their assertion that I had brain damage. This is an interesting write-up to start today. I don't know how many people have heard of Josh Rosen. He's a quarterback, college football quarterback for UCLA. and very good, and people think he'll be the number one draft pick whenever he comes out to the NFL. So this website, Bleacher Report, which is a sports website, they had an interview with him, and they asked him a few things in relation to what life is like as a college student and a football player. And you could probably say any athlete, but in this case, it's football. And he basically was saying that you can't really do both. You're going to probably concentrate on football and not really on your education. And so the Bleacher Report said, well, so in this battle of schedules, football wins out. And Rosen said, well, you could say that. And Bleacher Report said, so that's really for student athletes. So that's the reality, rather, for student athletes playing at a major university. And he said, well, I didn't say that. He said, but look, football and school don't go together. They just don't. Trying to do both is like trying to do two full-time jobs. And so he's saying that the emphasis there is on football. So I don't think that's surprising, but that probably is the reality at these big schools.
Probably is. I mean, obviously, I don't think they hold football practice during class hours, but a lot of the practices are probably several hours each day, which would definitely cut into homework time at the very least. And then, of course, they have to travel a lot, probably at least on Fridays, because their games are usually on Saturdays, which would take out a whole school day right there.
Yeah, he says, this Rosen guy, says, there are guys who have no business being in school, but they're here because this is the path to the NFL. There's no other way. In some other sports, there might be a minor league system or something, but for NFL, college football is the minor league system. He says, then there's the other side that says, raise the SAT eligibility requirements. He says, okay, raise the SAT requirement at Alabama and see what kind of team they have.
Oh.
So he's taking a shot at Alabama football. He says, you lose athletes and then the product on the field suffers. And Bleacher Report says, well, but don't those players go on to make a lot of money in the NFL? And he said, well, in some cases they do, but in a lot of cases they don't. And then what happens to them, those that don't? They don't have much of an education after school.
Yeah, that's really a perfect example of putting all your eggs in one basket and hoping that you become one of those rare few players who is good enough to make it at the highest level. I don't even really know if there's too many other football leagues around the world if you don't make it into the NFL. There used to be like NFL Europe,
right?
And that's gone now. I think they might be making some other football league that takes the place of college, but that's not even in existence yet. So right now, that's really what those guys are hoping to do, is strike it big in the big show. If they don't, they're not going to make much money because they don't even know how to do much else.
Right. And so it's interesting. Football, there's a lot of controversy around football these days, but you could also say just college sports in general, the big ones especially. But, of course, it's big, big business for the colleges. Fortune magazine has a report here of how much universities in the top 25 spend on their football program and how much they make. Alabama spends $36 million a year on their football program, but they make $81 million. So they're making most of their bucks there on the football program.
Well, that's just baffling, isn't it? Because they don't even pay any players, and they're still spending $36 million. Supposedly, they don't pay any players.
Right.
Maybe they're renovating the stadium every single year, or, you know, printing off new programs, or, I don't know, making new jerseys every year. I'm not really sure how it could possibly cost $36 million if all of your athletes are doing it for free.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, there'd be scholarships, of course, but that wouldn't be, you know,
I don't know if they
level.
Would factor that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know where that money goes to, but all of these, they spend a lot on football. Ohio State, they spend $34 million, but they make $58 million. Oregon spends $20 million, but they make $51 million. And on it goes. UCLA, where this quarterback is from, they spend $19 million. They only make $25 million, so they don't make quite as much, but they're still making money. So you can see, obviously, the colleges have a big money-making venture going on there with those sports. So that's always the debate that they have. Should you pay the athletes? I mean, they get a scholarship, but it's kind of a, I don't know, a lot of the guys aren't using it. You know, and there are a lot that are. You know, I'm sure there's some there's always the academic All-Americans that really are doing the best at both. But, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that they're just there for sports.
And there are some people who do suggest to get rid of all these big sports programs at all these colleges. They're always treated as outcasts because, obviously, it does make the schools a lot of money. But if you have a situation where all these guys probably would not even be in college if not for the fact that they could hit people really hard, then I don't really know why they should be in the college at all.
Yeah, I think the sports are great in terms of, in general. I mean, obviously with football, they might question that because of the injuries, but I think it's a great part of somebody's education. It's just that it's become so big to where really you're there to play football or you're there to play basketball, and the school is sort of an aside in a lot of cases. So too much emphasis probably on the sports, not enough on the academics. And I mean, and you hear constantly about players getting suspended for violations and problems and things like that. So anyway, it's a big business. People love it. They love watching it. It's huge, especially in, well, probably every state, but especially a state like Alabama where you don't have a lot of pro teams. Maybe they don't have any pro teams.
I don't think so.
But so football is, you know, is life there in a lot of ways. And but they do run into these interesting situations. It'd be interesting to take a look at all the guys that come through those programs and see where they end up, you know, and see if they've become successful or if they haven't.
Well, yeah, and the thing with sports, too, is that it just requires some balance. I mean, obviously, we like sports, but those guys are just going to school, and the school part of it, the actual studying and book learning part of it, is totally cast off to the side so that they can focus on sports entirely. It's kind of why I like the idea of some sort of a 2 or 4 year program where it's just a sports league that serves as kind of a minor football league for the NFL, because then you're being honest about it. You're actually going to do football and that's it. And you're not, you know, wasting the teacher's time in their classes while you just don't even try in their classes.
Yeah. You know, another path that might be viable would be to put some of these guys, especially the ones that are struggling with school, put them on like a 4-for-2 program where you go to school for 4 years, but you're taking enough classes to get a 2-year degree.
That's a good idea.
And then once they're done, if they can't get drafted or if they're not good enough, then give them a scholarship to finish up their final two once sports are over with. Now, I mean, I don't know if they want to spend 6 years of their life doing that, but that would be a manageable schedule because you could take half the class load, which would be like, what, 6 credits a semester or something? I'm not sure. I think that's about right. Mm-hmm. And then play the games. I don't know.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I have great ideas.
Wow. Did you hear that from someone else?
No, I just came off the top of my head, yeah.
Wow. Well, the thing is, with all these colleges, they're such nice environments. I mean, unless people are rioting, but obviously the campuses themselves are beautiful. And so if you were getting a free ride there, you might as well enjoy it for 6 years.
Yeah, and then let them, you know, student coach or something on the team. So there's probably ways around it all, but boy, that's a lot of money those schools are spending on football and other sports. Here's just another quick note. The original 1954 Godzilla actor Haru Nakajima died. He's 88 years old. Everybody remembers the classic Godzilla. Even if you haven't seen the movie, you see him walking around. It was an actual, they put a guy in a rubber suit, and he just walked over small things. You know, they had made small models of the city. And so, and he took it very seriously. They say he stomped over miniature bridges and buildings in a rubber suit and gave the world Godzilla, the fire-breathing, screeching monster that became Japan's star cultural export and an enduring symbol of the pathos and destruction of the nuclear age. And he portrayed Godzilla in the original 1954 classic, died Monday of pneumonia. He was 88 years old. The film, which went on to become a mega series and inspired Hollywood spinoffs, struck a chord with post-war Japan, the only nation in the world to suffer atomic bombing in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the closing days of World War II. He recalled that the rubber suit he wore was so hot, especially under the glaring lights of the movie set, that the sweat he wrung from his shirt would fill half a bucket. It's disgusting. Until recently, Nakajima had continued to be a star guest at festivals and events. He had been scheduled to be featured at the Tokyo International Film Festival in October. He said, "I am the original, the real thing. My Godzilla was the best." Even though they, of course, recreated it with animation, he was in the rubber suit, and he thinks his was better.
Wow, what a unique concept for a movie, too. I didn't understand how much depth there was there talking about Japan with them experiencing atomic bombing. I never knew there was a correlation there. So quite a concept there that obviously would hit home for the Japanese.
Yeah, and he this gentleman, Haru Nakajima, who was this original Godzilla actor, he said he went to zoos and he watched elephants and other animals walk to kind of get a feel for how Godzilla would walk. So he took it really seriously. And he thinks that he did the best with it. So
it's funny. It actually reminds me of a story my parents always tell me of when I was younger and I was I had some friends over to the house, and we were all probably like, what I like to do is read a book in the corner by myself while they were all building some tower. And then I'd see that they built it, go over and destroy it, and then go back to my book. So I think it is a lot more fun to actually destroy those things than it is to build them, because it's so much harder to build.
You were like the reading Godzilla.
Right.
You know, he just sits over there, minds his own business until there's time for destruction.
Yeah, I remember there was another time my grandpa went up to me at a party and took away my book because I was sitting in the corner there too. So I had to get over the imbalances there.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, people just kind of stay on their iPhones. Mm-hmm. So at least you're reading something.
Yeah, at least there was some benefit to that.
Take the book away, you pull out another one. Where does he get these
out of my
books
back
from?
Pocket.
Yeah. Here's an interesting story. I think this probably won't surprise too many people, considering the violence against the police and the anti-police protests that have been pretty popular over the last few years. This is from DFW CBS Local. They say record number of officers leaving the Dallas Police Department. Dallas Police Association President Mike Matta and others sounded the alarm months ago. Now, by the end of this month, Matta says 72 Dallas police officers are going to leave. 70% of them are retiring. The other 30% are going to make more money at other departments. He said, "We're losing some of our most experienced detectives, the investigator. You want to come out and solve that homicide or other serious crime." In addition, the city also has to pay an additional $40 million into the pension fund in the next year. So it's a double whammy. You lose these guys to retirement, and then you got to pay them the pension. To pay for that added cost, city manager T.C. Broadnax is proposing to slash the number of funded positions in the police department from 3,613 to 3,094. So they're losing people to retirement, or they're just leaving. They have to pay more pensions, and because they have to pay more pensions, now they can't afford to keep everybody that's there, so they got to cut more positions. So they're losing quite a few officers.
What a disaster. I mean, that obviously it sounds like something that would naturally happen in most police departments, but again, those pensions, we've talked about that before. Who knows how much money is actually in those, or if they're being funded properly. Some of those people might be in some trouble once they retire.
Yeah, and I don't know what if they're taking early retirement or how that's working, but you know, if you were an officer and you saw the current climate and you had a path to get out, I think most people would, because their lives are always on the line, but lately they're on the line in very well, when you wouldn't expect them to be. People coming up and just randomly shooting officers and so forth. So pretty serious business, they say. Can the department still respond to emergency calls quickly? They say that's the question, and that's a question for our new chief coming in on how she handles the staffing and allocations. So that's the other side of the coin. You know, sometimes people are upset with the way police handle things, but when you need help, if they can't get there, then that's not a good thing either.
And it does seem like a lot of the people who are complaining the most about the police end up not being happy either way. We've had stories on the show before where a guy who had been vocally protesting against police then called for the police to help him when he got robbed and was mad that they didn't show up fast enough. And it's like you can't have it both ways, where you're just going to uniformly criticize an entire group of people as if they're all racist, and then when they don't serve you, you get upset about it.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there in Dallas. I think Baltimore is a good example to look at. I don't know that they've necessarily lost a lot of officers, but they've tried to reform some things there, and the murder rate's been sky high. So I think last weekend they tried to have a no murder weekend. They phrased it better than that. That's all I can think to call it. But there were still murders. So they're trying to, I don't know, police themselves in some way, but that's the thing with lawlessness. You can't put it in a box and say, well, we'll be lawless until you know, we get our way, and then we'll start following the rules. Lawlessness just grows and expands unless it's stopped.
That's a really good point. I wonder how those police officers must feel, too, basically having their power taken from them. It's like they're making themselves vulnerable because in a lot of cases, they can't retaliate, or if they do, there's a threat of, you know, getting sued and losing your job over it. That's just that's the obvious consequence of undermining the police. That's a communist tactic. It's always written about in different communist documents of if you can undermine law enforcement, you're pretty fast on the way to really undermining and destroying the entire country. That's what people really need to think about. Instead of letting emotions get out of control, what is this leading to? What happens when the police are so powerless that people are allowed to run rampant?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in these cities. But that's in Dallas, record number of officers leaving the Dallas Police Department. Here's a write-up from The Guardian. The U.S. Federal Department is censoring use of term climate change, emails reveal. And this has got the climate change proponents pretty upset. Staff at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, otherwise known as the USDA, have been told to avoid using the term climate change in their work, with the officials instructed to reference weather extremes instead. The primary cause of human-driven climate change is also targeted with the term reduced greenhouse gases, blacklisted in favor of build soil organic matter, increase nutrient use efficiency. Meanwhile, sequester carbon is ruled out and replaced by build soil organic matter. So I think this is part of the Trump administration. They're trying to change the verbiage, and that's got people pretty upset. They want it to be called climate change. They want it to be called, you know, they have a whole list of things they want it to be called, and they're changing the way that they're addressing it, and it's ruffling some feathers.
Yeah, and they're calling it censorship, although really what it sounds like is they're changing the documents to be more accurate. Because, I mean, you could just call climate change climate same or climate 1 or 2 degree difference in the last 4,000 years. That would be more accurate. Maybe we should put those words in there instead, although I think they'd be even more upset.
We'll call it climate, not a lot to see here. That's not quite as scary. But you see, just the changing of the way it's talked about, it gets rid of some of the alarmist fear-mongering. And as they point out here a little later on, they say, well, they're not really even changing anything. It's just the verbiage. Now, I don't know if that's exactly right or not, but still, it's getting some people upset. They say, these records reveal, this is some emails they looked at, these records reveal Trump's active censorship of science.
Oh, boy.
He's censoring science in the name of his political agenda, says Meg Townsend. She's a government attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity. Well, you could flip that argument on its head and say, well, but what are you doing on the other side? You're also censoring in the name of your political agenda. So yeah. You just don't like the fact that he's doing what you're doing, but he's doing it a different way.
Yeah, that's a heavily biased term to say it's even censorship at all. I mean, obviously people on both sides can accuse the other side of censorship, but really which side has been totally exposed for creating junk science to support their argument? It has been the climate change alarmists. If anything, they are censoring opposing viewpoints. They're not even letting studies that oppose them come out in a lot of cases. That's real censorship. Changing a word or two to reflect more accuracy is not censorship at all.
Yeah, they're pretty upset about it. This lady continues, to think that federal agency staff who report about the air, water, and soil that sustains the health of our nation must conform their reporting with Trump administration's anti-science rhetoric is appalling and dangerous for America and the greater global community. That is that's a strong statement, lacking fact, but, you know, it's an emotion, that's for sure. Anti-science rhetoric. You know, it's really interesting how they throw those terms out there, but, okay, so where's the proof? What's anti-science about it? It's anti your brand of science, which, as you said, in a lot of cases is junk science because they've ignored a lot of data that doesn't fit in with their preconceived models and ideas. So, you know, at least be honest about it. Just put all the data on the table and look at it, but they're not doing that.
And you could easily just say that they have an anti-American, anti-Western agenda. I mean, that's way more realistic than anyone having an anti-science agenda. We've even talked about that before, how absurd that concept is to just be anti-science. It's the same as saying you're like anti-English or anti-history or anti-math. What does it really mean? I don't think people are, you know, filled with hatred when they think of like photosynthesis.
Right.
You know, it doesn't even, the term doesn't make sense, but people get whipped up and who knows how many people are going to be stirred into, you know, really hot emotions because of what that one person is saying.
Right. The thing people are anti is they're anti the use of science, if you want to call it that, to handcuff people in set up parameters for what people can do or not do based upon a political ideology, and just throwing out science as the cover for that. That's what makes people upset. Like you said, no one's protesting photosynthesis that I'm aware of. But so what are they going to do? Well, the Center for Biological Diversity, is currently suing several government agencies, including the EPA and State Department, to force them to release information on the censoring of climate change verbiage. Why stop there? Why not just sue the climate? You're too hot around here, or cold, or whatever it is. We'll take you to court.
I just, some of these actions, do they really think they have any hope of winning something like that? What is the purpose of wasting people's time and resources to sue over something like that? Deep down, a lot of them know that their side is not backed by a lot of evidence, and they just want to reduce the production capabilities of a lot of Western nations. They want some of these third world nations to be on the same plane, which is an unrealistic ideal, but that's what they want. And so they're just making up science and suing anyone who disagrees with it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So that's what's going on right now in the climate change battle. They don't like some of the changes in verbiage there. We've talked a little bit lately about sleep. It's good for you, apparently. And you need a certain amount of it. They keep having these studies about it and how not having enough sleep is really dangerous. They say, this is from the Daily Mail, sleeping less than 6 hours a night is as bad as binge drinking and severely damages your brain, according to a new study. Sleep deprivation raises risk of obesity, depression, heart attacks, and strokes. The most worrying consequences are rooted in the brain, research suggests. Sleep deprivation is linked with acute cognitive impairment, researchers found, and driving while sleep deprived could be as dangerous as driving when drunk. So I don't know that those are new revelations. I think we've kind of heard about those before, but they're just taking a look at these sleep habits. And so if you can get more than 6 hours a night, that is preferable. Not always possible, but, you know, obviously one rough night's not going to probably capsize you. But if it's a habit or a way of living, it could cause problems in the long run.
Yeah, that's true. And if you look at all the effects of sleep deprivation, there are definitely long-term ones. And, of course, throughout the next day, you're probably not going to be that effective in whatever your job is or whatever you're trying to spend your time doing. But then, of course, there are sudden effects as well. If someone is driving well after not sleeping at all, that can lead to death right away for not just that person, but other people that are crashed into. So just a lot of issues with that. And we always see that a big reason for sleep deprivation is the screens, mm-hmm. because people, it's almost like they have it attached to their hand and they sleep with it. We've even seen that as well. People sleep with it. It's the first thing they see in the morning. It's the last thing they see at night. It makes it a lot harder to go to bed when the last thing you see is a radiant light coming out of a screen.
Well, and especially if you don't have all your dings and beeps turned off.
Right.
Your phone will constantly ding and beep and tell you to pay attention to me. So, you know, I've experienced that. I used to, when I was younger, I used to do some overnight shifts in radio. And so I would come home. I mean, I would drive home probably 6:30 in the morning after working all night. And sad to say, I got two speeding tickets as a result of that. No, it wasn't crazy. It was going through town, and I think it was, and there was no one on the street. And the speed limit went from 45 to 35 to 45, and I just was still going 45 in the 35 twice. I got caught doing that, and again, it wasn't dangerous or anything. Necessarily, but I don't think I was paying enough attention because I was just a little out of it, and no problem other than I had to pay the piper.
Right.
So I haven't had very many of those in my life, but those two came as a result of that, and I always thought, I was just so tired that you're just a little, you're a step behind, and you know, again, they kind of set up some of those roads in a way that where you got to really be paying attention.
The old speed traps.
Yeah, the old speed traps. And of course, if you're the only guy out on the road at that time, or there's not many, they're gonna see you. So anyway, the state of Wisconsin got about $300 for me from my lack of sleep. Taught me a lesson.
Yeah, and maybe for that reason they wouldn't want people to sleep too much if it's going to be so profitable.
Yeah, they always ask the same question. What are you doing out this time? I'm like, I just got done working. And they never
they're so suspicious, yeah. Which is probably understandable for a lot of people when you're out at 2 a.m. or whatever it is. That's abnormal.
Yeah, but I didn't have anything to hide, so it was no problem. But I did have to pay the piper on those. They have some tips here for better sleeping. Some of this will apply to some and maybe not to others. They say one thing you can do is avoid late afternoon naps. I don't know. Every once in a while, I like an afternoon nap, and it doesn't seem to bother me too much. But some people really struggle with that. If they take a nap, I see this with my kids a lot. You know, they'll get tired, and I don't want them to go to sleep because then they're going to be up late. So I don't know. I think everyone's a little different in that way. But in general, they say avoid the late afternoon naps.
Yeah, maybe that's implying that early afternoon naps are better because it's not so close to when you go to bed at night. I've noticed that a few times if I take a nap right after work, even 3 or 4 hours later when I actually try to go to sleep, it does take a lot longer.
Hmm. Yep. They say some people need to wear an eye mask to block out any other sort of light that's there. Hopefully you're in a situation where it's dark. You can turn the lights off, but I suppose in some cases you can't. Some people need to use earplugs, they say, to block out external noises. They say you should not sleep with pets because they're nocturnal and they will run around and cause you trouble. So some people love that. That's kind of what they do. Others do not. So I guess it depends. And they say this would apply. They say this for alarm clocks, but this would apply for, I think, smartphones or computers or whatever. They say you just turn it against the wall. Otherwise, if you're just sitting there looking at the clock the whole time, you can just kind of stress out over, I got to fall asleep. I only get 2 hours of sleep. And, of course, like you mentioned, the cell phones, all those things, if they're active, they can mess with you and keep you awake. So those are some tips that may help your falling asleep so you're well-rested for the next day. Some people really struggle with that. You know, it's a constant thing where they just can't sleep.
Yeah, I have a few relatives and friends who always struggle with that. It's not too bad for me, but that's just something that would just be almost a nightmare, just having to try to go to work the next day after not sleeping the whole night. That's just the worst feeling, knowing that you have to get up pretty soon and you haven't been able to go to sleep.
Yeah, that's always a debate that creeps into my mind when that happens, is should I just get up and get on with things, or should I lay here, and which one should I do?
Because what good will I actually do if I go to work right now? I'm going to be like half asleep anyway.
Yeah. So hopefully maybe some of those tips will help out. Here's a warning if you're going to go to the beach of something called a sand hole. I don't know if people are that familiar with it. Basically, when people dig deep holes in the sand, either they dug it or somebody else did, and you get in there, you know, people like to kind of do that, you know, bury themselves partly in the sand. But sometimes it's more than you expected. And this happened in Virginia. It says officials warn of sand hole dangers after a woman dies at the beach. This is in Maryland, actually. A woman suffocated to death in Ocean City, Maryland, after falling into a large hole on the beach. A 30-year-old woman was vacationing, and she was from Texas. She fell into the large hole. Only her arm was visible, and so she suffocated. She apparently became separated from her family around 2 in the morning for some reason. I don't know what they were doing. And her body was found hours later on the beach. U.S. Life Saving Association spokesperson Tom Gill said, nationally, there are deaths every year from this. And this one in Ocean City is just a horrible reminder of the dangers of holes on the beach. Sand can be deadly if it caves in around you. They say it's a preventable incident. People should not be digging deep holes in the sand for the safety of those around them and people that come along later. And so, I don't know. I've been to the beach before, and it is kind of fun to dig around in there a little bit. But I guess you have to be careful because, especially if you were a kid or something, either, you know, whether you dig it and leave it, somebody falls in later and they don't see it, or whatever the case may be, it's something to be aware of if you're going to the beach.
That's a lot of work to put in at the beach to dig a hole that is that large. That does take some dedication, and obviously people walking around after that would have to be on the lookout. Hopefully no one's covering the hole, and you know, that would be dastardly.
Yeah, strange things can occur to on the beaches, but that's one thing to watch out for if you're heading out. There's a story the other week on the news, which was just sort of funny, and that's why it hit the headlines. A man is a homeowner, and he was in his house, and he heard this really loud thud on the roof, and he wasn't sure what happened, so he climbed up there. And he discovered that 15 pounds of frozen pork had landed on the roof of his home in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He has no idea where it came from. It just hit his roof. So they're thinking it fell out of an airplane. What's that expression, when pigs fly?
Right.
Well, maybe that's what happened. So bizarre. So, but this isn't the first time things like this have happened. There's a few other instances that they give here where things just fell out of the sky and they're not really sure why. A bizarre video of drivers abandoning their cars in Kuwait City in order to grab paper money falling from the sky went viral in 2015. No one knows where it came from. So they were driving, and all of a sudden money starts falling out of the sky, and of course everyone jumps out and starts taking it. So that's bizarre. Another one here says, rush hour motorists were alarmed when it began raining apples over a main road in Coventry, England in 2011. The freak downpour was thought to be caused by a wind vortex over a nearby orchard.
Mm.
It sucked all the apples up and dropped them somewhere else.
That's incredible.
It's awesome.
What kind of natural disaster is that?
Yeah, that could be painful. An apple hitting you in the head, that wouldn't feel good, or dent your car. Yeah, it's raining apples. Can you imagine the call to the police? It's raining apples.
They wouldn't even come. They'd probably just think you're messing with them.
Yeah, okay, sure. And in 2007, a woman in Louisiana was crossing the street when large tangled clumps of worms began dropping from above. The same sort of thing. They think the worms may have been propelled into the air by a water spout. You just walking across the road, minding your own business, and worms start falling on your head.
That would be a sort of a funny prank, just to be on a ledge above the road and just be dropping them down there. People think it's supernatural somehow.
Don't give people ideas. Those types of things.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, those types of things do happen, surprisingly. But anyway, those are some freak things. Yeah, it'd be really strange to have 15 pounds of pork land on your roof. I don't know. Well, there you go. I mean, and that's the thing, too, is if you don't know where it came from, you don't know who to contact. I suppose your insurance would cover it. I would think it's sort of a freak. You know, they have those commercials. I think it's for State Farm, where the guy's always, he's like at that university, the insurance university, and he's always telling people about the strange thing that happened. And maybe this is some of those. I mean, you know, weird things do happen, and then you have to figure out, am I insured for this? Can I get reimbursed for pork landing on my roof? Is that in the contract?
Those are, those examples from those commercials are apparently real life stories. Like, I don't know, like a squid got caught in a car whenever it went underwater or something. I forget. There are a lot of really strange things that can happen. I got reimbursed for a deer running into my car. So I think a lot of those things where if they're totally out of your control and nature of some sort caused it, they will cover it if you have decent insurance at least.
Did the deer have insurance?
No. I think it just got up like nothing happened and ran the direction it was going. And yet my car had a gigantic dent in the entire left side.
Wow.
But who knows? It might have just ran off to die out of the road. I don't really know.
Right. Yeah, that can happen. So, you have to watch out for those animals when you're driving. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Key of David programs coming up in a bit, also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury, talking a fair bit about the Philadelphia Youth Camp just wrapped up there in Edstone, England. There was one here in Edmond, Oklahoma before that. And he has a lot of letters from people that attended the camps and some really good experiences that they like to share there. So you can listen for that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Also, stop and check out thetrumpet.com. A top story today, Germany's shocking new bestseller, a book labeled as extremist, is flying off the shelves. That's by Richard Palmer and Josue Michaels. And also, Never Trust the German by Brad McDonald, talking about that interview he had over there with, it was his dad.
Nicholas Frank?
Yeah, his dad was, I was trying to think, his dad was worked for Hitler. I can't remember exactly what the...
Yeah, he was in I think he was a secretary for a while, but then he was in charge of all of Poland and all of the extermination camps over there.
Right. So there was really good interview there, where some good insight into what's going on there in Germany. So that could, if you just look at that title, you could think, what? But it's the German's own words.
It's not us saying it.
Right, it's the German's words, and he's just kind of giving you some insight there. So really interesting. Grant, you've got a write-up here from the National Review. Why does the left suddenly hate Russia? I think we all remember in the Obama administration that there was the reset button with Russia. Hillary Clinton took that button over there. I think it was spelled wrong, but nevertheless. And then of course, the hot mic incident where President Obama was talking to Medvedev, I think it was. And he said, wait till I get elected next time and, you know, I'll have more freedom and so forth. So Russia was never a big issue at that point. And if you remember, of course, they were just gobbling up the Ukraine and a lot of other places, and we didn't do anything. And now all of a sudden, Russia is the biggest thing, the biggest enemy in the world, because they're trying to say that they interfered in our election to get President Trump elected. So National Review says, why does the left suddenly hate Russia?
It's a really good question, and I just was trying to figure out how many times I've heard the word collusion in the last 8 or so months. It's just, it's unbelievable how the one side of the political spectrum has just absolutely melted down. I've never seen it in my lifetime because I was never really old enough to notice too much the last time that they lost a big election, which was, I guess, with George W. Bush. But it seems like this time they're far more furious than they ever were with him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even just looking at some of the headlines today on some news sites, it would be a little more on, the leftist side. It's all Russia collusion. They're attacking the president's vacation. They're attacking the fact that he tweets. They're attacking all these things. And then there was another headline saying how the Democrats can win, different seats. And it's like, well, hang on a second. I mean, are you just a mouthpiece for one political party? Which, yes, they are. But, I mean, you would think there would be, why do the Democrats have to win the next election? I mean, this is a major news site. But their whole thing is destroy the current, administration, then get the Democrats back in. And so that thinking is just tying into all this Russia talk. And they haven't really found anything yet. If they had, I'm sure it would be all over the place. Nothing of substance that I've seen. But it's like if they just keep saying it, maybe something will happen. That's their hope, I guess.
Yeah, and it does just remind me of like a toddler's tantrum. Just, a congresswoman the other day said her entire goal in her job was to get Mr. Trump impeached. And that is not productive for the country in any way. She doesn't have any sort of agenda that she's running on, but for some reason, so many people are just militantly against the president that's the only thing they care about is getting him out of office at all costs. And they're just saying the word collusion over and over again like a mindless chant. And they're talking about impeaching someone when they have no proof and no grounds to do so. Imagine if Mr. Trump had been caught on a hot mic telling a Russian leader that he would have more flexibility after winning the election. There would have been a total meltdown, and yet conveniently it's not that way when someone on their side does it.
Yeah, and didn't we just sanction Russia as well? So, it's an interesting...
It is just a strange problem that we have here where we're crying about Russia, and yet Mr. Trump has been so much more inconvenient for Russia than President Obama ever was. Here's a bunch of examples here. His whole campaign message, which he's now trying to carry out with his agenda, it was about rebuilding the military, restoring deterrence abroad, Jacksonianism instead of Obamism, and pushing fracking and horizontal drilling to crash world oil prices. That's largely a very anti-Russian agenda that the president has now, at least in comparison with Hillary's green advocacy and the chance that she'd continue the reset policies in place during her tenure as Secretary of State. As expected, Trump's first 6 months of governance have proved more bothersome to Russia than were the Obama administration's in 2009. So here he is, and by his deeds, he's far more hostile to Russia than anyone on the left ever has been, even since like the late 1940s. They've always looked for a way to try to be in league with the Russians. Robert Kennedy actually had some actual collusion with Russia trying to undermine Ronald Reagan's chance of being reelected in the 1980s. So many instances where they have tried to sugarcoat the ideas of communism so that it seems more acceptable to the American public. And it seems like the Soviet Union wasn't as much of a threat to us as they really were. And now all of a sudden, the last year or so, they've totally changed their stance and gone McCarthyite on all of us, like just trying to hunt down anyone who has ever spoken to someone of Russian nationality in their entire lifetimes. And somehow that's evidence of collusion.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly Russia is an enemy of the United States and has been for many, many years. So the way that, they would go about trying to infiltrate the U.S. would probably change somewhat depending on who's in power in the U.S. They'd have to play their cards a little differently. So clearly they are out to dominate the world and push America out of the picture. But the thing about talking about collusion right now is that the last 8 years, the whole policy has been collusion. Like everything, they didn't do anything. They let Russia do whatever they wanted. Syria, remember that? We'll let Syria deal with, or we'll let Russia deal with the Syrian chemical weapons. Russia just marched right into the Ukraine. They did whatever they wanted. Not even a peep from us. No missile defense system. Like we turned our backs on Ukraine. We turned our backs on really Europe in some ways.
Poland. Yeah.
So you want to talk about collusion. Now, you don't have to have secret meetings or emails. You can just say, hey, guys, do whatever you want. We won't do a thing about it. Now you want to talk about some collusion,
yeah,
or surrender. I don't care what you want to call it. But they should take a look at some of that before taking a look at what's going on right now.
Exactly, because what are the fruits of both sides? I mean, if you just look at it, how important is it really if someone in the Trump administration had a meeting with a Russian ambassador, which is common political practice, when really what we should be looking at is what are the fruits? Who is more of a threat to Russia, or who is more anti-Russia? And it's clearly this administration over the last one. But for some reason, they're trying to get into the minutiae of it all because I guess they know that the American attention span cannot withstand their monotonous reporting on Russia. So they just think that, well, if we keep saying Russia, everyone's going to eventually believe it because they'll get tired of listening to what our substance actually is.
Yeah, that's probably a real psychology to it. You know how it is with anything. If you just hear something over and over again, you tend to kind of get like, okay, whatever, you know, just capitulate. You don't want to hear any more about it. And they just keep talking about it. So, but nothing yet has stuck as far as I know. I mean, they keep trying, but I haven't seen anything actually, you know, have any staying power.
Yeah, and that's some of the most funny parts on any of these news shows. Even a guy on MSNBC was pressing, I think it was Maxine Waters, on what proof they actually have. And it's just comical to try to see what they say, because after all these months, after all this time, there's no proof whatsoever. And yet we have a special investigation going on that doesn't make a lot of sense. There isn't much of a reason to have started that in the first place. And yet there's an investigation on someone where there's no proof.
Yeah, that's like the breaking news that you get. I think that came out last week, where they're talking about, they're investigating even more now. They haven't found anything, but the news is that we're going to do more investigations, and that's breaking news somehow. So it'll be interesting to see what if they keep going with this or not. I don't know. I mean, the ratings are good. They're very good for MSNBC and some of these other outlets. So maybe, you know, maybe that's a story they want to keep running with and see if something sticks. But if nothing else, if you just want to look at the United States in general and say, okay, clearly disagreements, people have a lot of different thinking, but wouldn't you want to try to at least get together on something to have a productive 4 years? They don't want to produce. They want to just destroy and put themselves back in power. There's nothing constructive about that. There's nothing nation first about that. It's just all, we want to get in power so we can be in power.
It's left first, and it's really, they're pushing militaristic language to try to undermine this administration because they know that a lot of people who are unstable, like we've talked about before, will act on some of these things they're saying. Resistance is a military term, and they're using it to talk about politics. That's very extreme, and it is causing a lot of people to take them literally and try to react with violence. We're seeing that all over the place. And they're not really giving a lot of reasons as to why they hate Russia so much. There isn't even proof that Russia hacked the Democratic committee's emails. It looked like it could have been Russia, but a lot of different hackers had the ability to make it look like it was someone else. There's not even been proof. There hasn't even been research done into that hacking because the Democratic Party won't allow it. So we don't even know if Russia got involved in all of that. But regardless, there's no evidence. There's no reason to it. They just attack Russia over and over again. Here's a bunch of logic and a bunch of facts here from Victor Davis Hanson, who wrote this article. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but at least he is bringing up an abundance of examples for why he believes what he does. He says that there are some rare instances where the U.S. and Russia have common goals, and there could be reasons to at least consider working with them, even if we don't. That's not exactly what you see from the other side, where they're closing their ears and shutting their eyes and screaming Russia. They're not thinking about any possibilities. For example, Russia has a similar fear of unchecked Muslim populations flooding into their country. They're not letting that happen over there. They have similar thoughts on that. Russia distrusts China as much as we do. I don't know if that's true anymore, but that's one thing where he says at least we have a similarity there. Although, again, I'm not really sure that's the case anymore. Russia has a weakening economy, partially because we're undermining their oil industry in Europe, and so they might be a bit more vulnerable and willing to talk now than they ever have been. So there's a possibly a method there for how we could interact with them a little bit more peaceably than we have. And really example after example like that. And he says here, we should at least be open to a realist understanding that on occasion we might cooperate with Russia, both to avoid a nightmarish Armageddon and to solve rare common problems. He then goes on to clarify for a very long time that Putin is a monster. I mean, obviously, he does kill journalists and he does poison political foes. And there's probably no chance he'll ever hold a free election over there. Those things are all commonly known. But there's a lot of hypocrisy here when there's a good chance he's no more of a murderer than the Castro brothers in Cuba. And yet we have a detente with them and we tried to open up a lot of economic ties with them under the Obama administration. Putin is no more or less trustworthy than the Iranians. And we made a gigantic, horribly, poorly thought out nuclear deal with the Iranians. There is no freedom in China. The communists still in control have the blood of 50 million Chinese dead on their hands from Mao's brutal revolutions and genocides. Yet we enjoy all sorts of cultural, political, and economic bipartisan relationships with China, whose nuclear patronage of North Korea has done more damage to U.S. security than any plot from the dark mind of Vladimir Putin. And then it says even in terms of just Russia's history, Putin is a piker compared with Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin, who may have orchestrated the deaths of 20 million Russians, yet they were far more hospitable toward the Russians while he was in charge.
Yeah, and that, I think that's a great write-up there from the National Review on why does the left suddenly hate Russia, because you do have to look at a historical context. You have to look at what our policies are, the United States policies, with a lot of different nations, deals that have been made. Because if you don't have that context, you can get lost in the rhetoric. But when you look at the whole context, you say, well, hang on a second. You'd ask that same question. Well, why are you so upset with Russia when you've done this, 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 and this? And the clear answer is you think it might give you a shot to knock out the current administration and get right in power. Might as well just call it what it is. I wonder how many people really know that. I mean, maybe quite a few do. You know, it's hard to take a poll on that, but that would be interesting to see. You would think there'd be quite a few that could see through it all, but then again, I don't know. It seems like it's 50-50 in the country.
At least, like he brings out, maybe we could at least consider talking with the Russians and trying to agree with them on the same level as what we have with all of these other nations that are extremely anti-American, or we should try to cut off ties with all of them like we apparently are trying to do with Russia right now. It just seems like Russia is the one cherry-picked nation to isolate while we even... A lot of people are sort of friendly toward talking with North Korea, and those same people would never want to talk with Russia, at least not right now when they are panicking about the last election.
Well, and he makes a great point there, Victor David Hansen, about the Iranian deal. And it's been talked about. You can go back and look at old Trumpet daily radio shows, or lots of write-ups on thetrumpet.com. That, do you want to talk about collusion? You want to talk about lies and deception and misleading and under-the-table nonsense? That was full of that. It's unbelievable. And yet, and then they even came out and they just admitted to the media that, yeah, we lied to all of you guys, and, you know, just to get the deal through. And the media, I don't know, it's like they kind of liked it. Like, yay. It's so weird. You think they would have been furious about it, but they're not. So whenever you want to talk about what's going on today, fair enough with Russia, but you got to look at all that historical context. And I think it gives a different picture.
Well, the hypocrisy is just about enough to make us fall out of our seats when you see the way the media responds to the last administration versus this administration. As far as I know, there was not $400 billion of cash flown into Russia by the Trump administration, like the Obama administration did for Iran.
Right.
And yet, why is there so much more panic about Russia than there was about Iran before that deal went into place?
Very interesting. It's from the National Review. Why does the left suddenly hate Russia? A lot of great write-ups at thetrumpet.com about what's going on with Russia and other nations now, and, of course, what you can expect to see in the future with those nations. That's what everyone always wonders, but there's a lot of good information on thetrumpet.com about that. That's all the time we have for today on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on the way. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.